One of the questions I ask the students every year at the Ambassador Bible Center, where I teach Daniel and Revelation, and also cover some other aspects of prophecy, one of the questions I ask them every year is, what was the most significant date of the 20th century? And I've had various answers from, you know, the day that Elvis Presley was born, to somebody even suggested September the 11th, which, as you know, was the 21st century. So, you know, I get all kinds of answers. But, you know, to me, and I think to many, the most significant date of the 20th century was June 28th, 1914, which was the day on which the Archduke Franz Ferdinand was assassinated, and that was the event that triggered off World War I. It was, as one author described it and used this as the title of his book on the subject, the end of order. It was the end of a world order which had continued for centuries, and the world since then has never had peace. It is very much the case that every single conflict in the world today, whatever conflict you hear about on your television news, you can trace the origins back directly to the assassination of the Austrian Archduke Franz Ferdinand, because what happened that day just set off a ripple effect that continues right down to this present time. One thing that happened with World War I is you had the rise of ethnicity as a factor in world conflict. At the end of World War I, you had a treaty, the Treaty of Versailles. The major powers got together in Paris and discussed how to divide up the world. Before World War I, you had these great empires. Suddenly, these empires had gone. And it seemed like every ethnic group within these empires wanted its independence. And at the Treaty of Versailles, they decided on how things should be handled from that point on. World War I was often called the war to end all wars. Lord Wavell, who was present at the Treaty of Versailles, made the comment that the peace, the treaty, was a peace to end all peace. And it's been very true, because there's been never-ending conflict since then. Something started with World War I that continues to this day, because after World War I, you had all these ethnic groups wanting independence. They wanted their own nation. So you've had an increase in the number of nations, a proliferation in the number of nations, which continues down to the present time. Just 2 weeks ago, another country came into existence, Montenegro, which, by the way, already uses the euro as its currency, even though it's not even in the European Union. So nationalism or ethnicity have become major factors in the world in the past 80 or 90 years. The world has become very much, has entered a situation very similar to what is described at the end of the book of Judges. What it says in the end of the book of Judges really is a description of what was happening back at that time, but it still helps us to understand the situation in which we find ourselves today. The very last verse of Judges says, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And it seems like every group in the world wants to rule itself, wants to be independent of whatever nation that they are a part of. It's interesting that since the formation of the United Nations, a little over 60 years ago, we've had more wars than in any other period of 60 years in the history of mankind. Yet the United Nations was set up with the aim of ensuring world peace, but we've had even greater conflict. I noticed in the Wall Street Journal on the 2nd of June, just a couple of weeks ago, there was an interesting editorial called The Akaka State, quite a long editorial here, and it's all about the desire of many native Hawaiians to separate from the United States. And this is the comment in the Wall Street Journal. The last time we wrote about the Native Hawaiian Government Reorganization Act in July 2005, we called it secessionist, unconstitutional, and un-American. And that was being kind. Our view of the bill, which, like Freddy Krueger, refuses to die, hasn't changed. It would create a sovereign government similar to existing Indian tribes for the roughly 400,000 people who identify themselves as Native Hawaiians. The Akaka Bill, named after its Hawaiian Senate sponsor, allows for the complete legal and territorial independence from the United States and the reestablishment of an Hawaiian nation state, an independent Hawaii. It opens up a Pandora's box of possible future problems, with every ethnic group in the United States wanting independence. Now, that may seem far-fetched, but it's exactly what's happened in the former Soviet Union since the collapse of communism 15 years ago, and it's what's been happening around the world since World War I. If you look at Canada, Quebec has voted a number of times on whether to secede from Canada, and the vote is usually around 50%, like 49 point something, as against 50 point something. So a lot of people believe it's only a matter of time before Quebec secedes from Canada. Look at the book of Matthew again, Matthew chapter 24, again that pivotal chapter on Bible prophecy, because there's something here which ties in with this trend that we've seen in the last 90 years. While you're turning there, I might just mention, to emphasize the point, my wife and I lived in Africa for many years, and we've traveled a lot in Africa. There are 54 countries in Africa. One-third of them right now are fighting civil wars. One-third. Those wars are all ethnically based. It is one ethnic group against another within the country, because the concept of a country in Africa just isn't there. People identify primarily with their tribe. It's exactly the same, of course, in the Middle East with Iraq. We've got the same problem there. You've got the Kurds, you've got the Shiites, the Sunnis, you know, you've got different tribes, even different religious beliefs are involved. It's the same in Afghanistan, where we're also fighting a war. You know, tribalism is a major factor in world politics today. Before World War I, people accepted imperialism. Imperialism was in vogue. Imperialism is where one nation or one power rules over dozens of others, like the British Empire, for example, which had dozens or hundreds of ethnic groups within the empire. And, you know, the people were basically loyal, and they fought for Britain in different conflicts. But after World War I, you had this rise of ethnicity, where each group wants its own government, its own independence. Matthew 24 and verse 3, again, Jesus was asked by the disciples, "What will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" And he answered and said, "Take heed that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many." So he first mentions false religion. "And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom." The word nation there is the Greek word ethnos, E-T-H-N-O-S, which is where we get our word ethnic from. Ethnic conflict is different from conflict between nations, as we see in the same verse. Nation will rise against nation, so ethnos against ethnos, and kingdom against kingdom. A kingdom is a political entity. A king or a president is the head of state of a political entity. So the United States has a president, and most countries do. Some countries have kings. They are political entities. But nation against nation is ethnos against ethnos. And it's one of those things that was prophesied to be a factor at the time of the end. Like I said, prior to World War I, you had these big empires with dozens or even hundreds of different ethnic groups within the one empire. When the Austrian Archduke was assassinated in 1914, he was assassinated by a Serb who was a member of a Serbian nationalist party that wanted a greater Serbia. He wanted all the Serbs to be in one kingdom, which was the kingdom of the Serbs. But the Austrians ruled over part of Serbia. Now, the Austrians within their empire, which was right in the middle of Europe, right in Central Europe, the Austrians had 11 distinct ethnic groups. You had Czechs, you had Slovaks, you had Austrians, you had Slovenes, you had Italians, you had Serbs, and you had some others as well, up to 11 different, well, they did have 11 officially recognized different ethnic groups. And again, you see, all this was to change with World War I. And then after World War I, you had new countries created. We saw this morning the Czech Republic and Slovakia, which used to be Czechoslovakia up until about 12 years ago. So after World War I, Czechoslovakia came into existence, but in 1994, it broke up into two nations because the Slovaks wanted to be separate from the Czechs. So you have two countries. 10 years ago, we saw in the Balkans how Yugoslavia divided up into many different countries, and it still hasn't finished. Montenegro is just the latest, but the next one probably will be Kosovo, and there may even be one or two others. The Bosnians and the Herzegovinans may separate from each other. And it's the same in Africa, again, with each ethnic group wanting its own independence because people identify primarily with their ethnicity. This emphasizes the importance of tribalism in biblical prophecy. And that's what I want to talk about. Nation shall rise against nation, ethnos against ethnos. It's not only in Africa and Europe and Asia that we see this tribalism. We really see it everywhere. You know, in Western countries in the last 30, 40 years, we've had multiculturalism emphasized. And multiculturalism denies tribalism. It tries to make out that there are no differences between different cultures. But, you know, in the rest of the world, people still identify primarily, you know, by their tribe, by their ethnicity. And it's very much a factor in global conflict. Just think for a moment about Iraq and Afghanistan and countries in the Middle East. You know, many of the peoples in these countries are Muslims. Islam, the religion of Islam, was founded by Muhammad in the 7th century AD. Muhammad believed that the Arabs are descended from Ishmael, Abraham's other son, by his wife's handmaid, Hagar. Muhammad saw Islam as the religion of the Arabs, just as Judaism was the religion of the Jews. If you want to read something on this, Karen Armstrong's biography of Muhammad is a good place to start. Pages 161 and 212, to be exact, cover this particular point about Muhammad and the Arabs being descended from Ishmael. Now, the Arabs originally were the peoples in what is now Saudi Arabia, the Arabian Peninsula, Saudi Arabia and Yemen. Before Muhammad, they were all fighting each other. Muhammad united them with a common religion. And then that religion spread out in, you know, three different directions, east, north, and west. And as the religion spread out, so the Arab peoples and the Arabic language spread out. So you have lots of other peoples now that are Arabic speaking, but ethnically they're not really Arabs. But still, because the religion unites them all, it has given the Arab peoples greater influence than would otherwise have been the case. Let's look at a prophecy regarding Muhammad's and his descendants, regarding the Ishmaelites. In Genesis chapter 16, remember again how Abraham had two sons, one by his wife, Hagar, his wife Sarah, and the other by his handmaid, Hagar. Genesis 16. We look at this prophecy here, beginning in verse 12. The angel of the Lord said to her, "Behold, you are with child, and you shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has heard your affliction. He shall be a wild man." Even in the 7th century, when Islam began as a religion, this was the reputation of the area known as Arabia, that the people were rather wild. "He shall be a wild man. His hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren." Who are his brethren? The Israelites and their descendants. Remember, Ishmael was Hagar's son, but also Abraham's son, just as Isaac was Abraham's son through Sarah. So his brethren are the Israelites and their descendants, of whom the Jews were just one tribe, the tribe of Judah. This is a prophecy that applies very much to today, when Ishmaelites, or Arabs, are living around the world, mostly in the Western nations, the white English-speaking countries, and France. Actually, France has more Arabs living there than in any other Western country. Now, what about the other tribes of Israel? Remember, after King Solomon, the 12 tribes divided into two nations, Israel and Judah. Judah kept David's royal line, but was made up of just two tribes, Judah and Benjamin. Their descendants comprise the nation of Israel today. The other 10 tribes were taken into captivity by the Assyrians in the 8th century BC and disappeared. Yet Bible prophecy shows that they still play a role. Look at Genesis chapter 49. Turn to Genesis 49, and you see a prophecy here relating to the 12 tribes of Israel in the last days. Now, what I hope you take away from this presentation this afternoon is the realization that tribalism, tribal identity, is still very important at this period of time. Even though our societies in the Western world may downplay tribalism and emphasize multiculturalism, it is very much the case, though, that in biblical prophecy, tribalism plays a role. That people do have an identity as tribes, as ethnic groups, and certain things are prophesied to happen to each of the tribes, and you see this revealed in the prophecies in the scriptures. Genesis chapter 49, Jacob called his sons and said, "Gather together that I may tell you what shall befall you in the last days." And here all 12 tribes are mentioned. Let's just notice two of them. One is easy to identify. The other is one of the lost tribes of Israel. Let's have a look at the one that is easy to identify, that everybody can identify, beginning in verse 8. Judah, you are he whom your brothers shall praise. Judah, the father, the ancestor of the Jewish people, of whom the nation of Israel is descended today. So this is a prophecy regarding Judah. You are he of whom your brothers shall praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. You know, when you grab somebody by the neck, they have no maneuverability. And, you know, this is very much the case. Israel, or Judah, as it should be, is on top of the hostile nations around them. It has to have military supremacy in order to avoid being wiped out. Because if the Jews suffered just one defeat, they would be finished. The nations around them can suffer a dozen or even 100 defeats and still survive because there's so many of them and they're so big. But when it comes to the Jews, they can only suffer one military defeat. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. So, you know, there are subject people, some of the other nations, some of the other tribes that are under the authority, if you will, of the tribe of Judah. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you've gone up. He bows down, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who shall rouse him? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh comes, and to him shall be the obedience of the people. Now this is a prophecy which was not fulfilled in ancient times. It could certainly be describing Judah today. Shiloh is the Messiah who has still not come. You know, we're waiting for the second coming of Jesus Christ. And again, this is a prophecy about the last days and the role of Judah in the last days. There is another reference to the Messiah further down when another son of Israel is mentioned, and that's Joseph. Look at verse 22. Joseph is a fruitful bough, a fruitful bough by a well. His branches run over the wall. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, and hated him. But his bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. So another reference to the Messiah there, and the role of the Messiah. Now Matthew Henry's commentary in commenting on verse 22, the prophecy regarding Joseph as a fruitful bough, says that the blessings of Joseph would be very large and full. These verses relate to the last days and show that Joseph would be playing a major role, certainly amongst the tribes of Israel. And yet, today, the vast majority of people do not know where Joseph is and feel that any prophecies relating to him are irrelevant. But let's have a look. In Genesis 48, the previous chapter, we see that Joseph is very relevant. There's something here which many people do overlook in trying to understand some of these identities of peoples at this end time. Now, we saw the photograph this morning of Israel blessing Joseph's sons. It wasn't a photograph, as you realize, because they didn't have cameras back then, but we saw an actual photograph. Now, Genesis 48 here, let's have a look and read an account of this. In verse 8, Israel saw Joseph's sons and said, "Who are these?" And Joseph said to his father, "They are my sons whom God has given me in this place." He said, "Please bring them to me and I will bless them." Now the eyes of Israel were dim with age so that he could not see. Then Joseph brought them near him and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said to Joseph, "I had not thought to see your face, but in fact God has also shown me your offspring." So Joseph brought them from beside his knees, and he bowed down with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim with his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh with his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near him. You know, this is just so detailed, so exact in its description, that it must have relevance. And yet the world just dismisses it as being irrelevant. Then Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, guiding his hands knowingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. So, you know, by tradition, by the law of primogeniture, it should have been the other way around. But it's very carefully described here, very exactly. And he blessed Joseph and said, "God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has fed me all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads." Then the next line is extremely important. "Let my name be named upon them." Let my name, Israel, be named upon them. Now today we have a country in the Middle East that calls itself Israel. And whenever people are studying the Bible and they read about Israel in prophecy, they automatically think of the country in the Middle East. But here Israel specifically said, "Let my name be named upon them, upon the two sons of Joseph." So, you know, they are Israel primarily, that the Jews are Judah. And so again, this is a cause of confusion when trying to understand Bible prophecy. "Let my name be named upon them and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and let them go into a multitude in the midst of the earth." Now when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. So he took hold of his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to his father, "Not so, my father, for this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head." But his father refused and said, "I know, my son, I know. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations." So he blessed them that day, saying, "By you Israel will bless, saying, may God make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh." And thus he set Ephraim before Manasseh. You know, again, this prophecy was never fulfilled in the Jewish people. If you look at history, it can only have been fulfilled if you look for two brothers, two nations that are very similar, where one became a great multitude of nations, many different countries, nations that became one, and one became the greatest single nation, it can only be the United States and the British Empire and Commonwealth. The British Empire and Commonwealth came first, as it says here in prophecy. Now, we have a booklet on that, which I believe will be at the back if you are not familiar with this. But again, the important thing to realize is this tribal identity has significance at the time of the end, that there is some significance to all of this, that God had these things recorded down for us for a purpose. "Let my name be named on them," Israel. Now, the fact that Israel and Judah are separate in modern times is emphasized in the book of Hosea. Look at Hosea, which is primarily a prophecy regarding Ephraim, the multitude of nations, the British Empire and Commonwealth, as it is today, It was the empire. It's now more the Commonwealth and very independent nations. But Hosea chapter 5 and verse 5, here is a prophecy which again was never fulfilled in ancient times. So it must be a prophecy relating to the future. In verse 5, the pride of Israel testifies to his face. Therefore Israel and Ephraim stumble in their iniquity. Judah also stumbles with them. With their flocks and herds they shall go to seek the Lord, but they will not find him. He has withdrawn himself from them. They have dealt treacherously with the Lord, for they have begotten pagan children. Now a new moon shall devour them and their heritage. Now, Israel, the 10 tribes that broke away from the Davidic monarchy after the time of Solomon, the 10 tribes were taken into captivity by the Assyrians in the 8th century. It was over 100 years later that the Jews were taken into captivity by the Babylonians. Here it says that Israel, Ephraim, and Judah will all fall within a new moon, in a new moon, which is a 30-day period. So, you know, this is a prophecy about them coming down at the same time. And again, this never happened historically. So it has to take place in the future. Now, we know who the Jews are, the people in the Middle East, but then it mentions Israel and Ephraim as being separate and distinct from Judah. Well, Ephraim, again, was the multitude of nations, as it shows in Genesis 48. Israel, well, again, remember, Israel, the man Israel, said, "Let my name be named on them," talking about Joseph's two boys. Joseph's two boys were Ephraim and Manasseh. If Ephraim is mentioned separately here, Israel then is applicable to Manasseh. And Manasseh, this nation we are in today, is the greatest nation in Israel today at this time. So therefore this, I believe, is a prophecy relating to the United States, the nations of the British Commonwealth, and Judah, the Jews. Now what is interesting is that for the first time ever in history, those three nations are actually on the same side in the conflict that is being described now as the Long War against terrorism. And it's no longer beyond the imagination to see how they might all come down at the same time, because they are affected by each other. The Jewish nation could not survive, for example, without help and support from the United States. And if anything happened to the United States, Britain probably would come down as well. And Australia and Canada, because they're all very closely tied together. But the important thing, again, to see here is that tribal identity means a lot, even at the time of the end, in Bible prophecy. And that's something that we need to understand, and that's the purpose of this particular lecture. Remember, by the way, as we turn back to Genesis 49, that Manasseh means causing to forget, which I think is a very apt description of the United States, because we tend to forget history very quickly and the lessons of history very quickly. Genesis 49, verse 22, if I can just mention here, in Genesis 48, where we saw Israel giving his name to Joseph's two sons, here in Genesis 49, we do not see Ephraim and Manasseh mentioned separately. In the context of the last days, we see Joseph mentioned in verse 22. So we see Ephraim and Manasseh mentioned together through their common ancestor, Joseph. It says Joseph is a fruitful bough. So there's certain commonalities. The British brought a lot of development to the various colonies they had around the world. Just as Americans developed a great deal, this country and also other countries that they got involved in. Joseph is a fruitful bough by a well. The fact that Joseph is mentioned here and not Ephraim and Manasseh separately hints at something again which helps us to understand Bible prophecy. If we really want to understand where we are at this time, we really need to look at the U.S. and the British Empire as one, because it helps us get a much better view of world history. It helps us understand the 20th century more, helps us understand where we are now, helps us understand where we're going into the future. If you look at the two as one, We tend, and have done since 1776, to look at the two separately. A few historians do look at both together. Winston Churchill was one who wrote his History of the English-Speaking Peoples after World War II. And that looks at the United States, which he described as the Great Republic, and looks at the nations of the British Empire and Commonwealth as one, with a common history. James Calder is another one, who called his book Revolutionary Empire. One empire, not empires with an S on the end, but empire, because the British and American empire was based on individual freedom and not on a kind of a collectivization or a dictatorial form of authority as previous empires. So he looked at them as one as well. And there's a few others who've done the same thing. But Bible prophecy helps us to see that we need to look at the two as one. But notice then in verse 23, the archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, and hated him. You know, this suggests a major military role in the last days, which of course is exactly what has been the case. The archers fire from a great distance. And again, you know, most of our conflicts have been fought around the world, not at home. I think that will change given time, but, you know, most of our conflicts have been fought a long way away. It's interesting, too, just to look back at Genesis chapter 21, because there's an interesting prophecy regarding Ishmael here, which may or may not tie in with what we just read about the archers who have bitterly grieved Joseph. But in Genesis 21 and verse 20, it says here regarding Ishmael, God was with the lad, and he grew and dwelt in the wilderness and became an archer. The descendants of Ishmael, the Arab peoples. And, you know, here we have this major problem with terrorism, which, you know, I believe is going to get worse, not get better, certainly not in the short term. But again, the importance here is to realize there are prophecies regarding these different ethnic groups, these different tribes, and those prophecies are very much applicable to the period in which we live. An American historian in 1940 wrote a history of the British Empire. His name was James Truslow Adams, and he was America's preeminent historian. He died in 1948. And he wrote in his History of the British Empire, he wrote in 1940, which was a very pivotal year. Britain and the British Empire were all the countries of the British Empire were already at war with Germany. The United States was neutral. And, of course, the election of 1940 was fought on maintaining that neutrality. And that year was also the year of the Battle of Britain. And if Britain had lost the Battle of Britain, if Germany had defeated Britain, then Germany would have been able to dictate a new world order to the United States and to any other country, because Germany would have been the supreme power. So James Truslow Adams wrote in the midst of all of this, and this is the final paragraph of his book. And it's a very prophetic paragraph, because really it describes the 60 years since World War II. Different peoples may have different ideals of government, but for those who have been accustomed to freedom of press and of spirit, the possible overthrow of the British Empire would be a catastrophe scarcely thinkable. Not only would it leave a vacuum over a quarter of the globe into which all the wild winds of anarchy, despotism, and spiritual oppression could rush, but the strongest bulwark outside ourselves for our own safety and freedom would have been destroyed. And really, you know, we've seen that since World War II, just chaos and confusion around the world. And again, it comes back largely to this rising sense of ethnicity and the increasing conflicts everywhere. You know, you can just take a country like Sri Lanka, for example. Sri Lanka right now is going through the worst terrorist war in the world, where the Tamils want to break away from the Sinhalese. Sri Lanka, which was previously called Ceylon, was a part of the British Empire and enjoyed peace and prosperity for, you know, well over 100 years. And then after independence, The Tamils started wanting their independence as well. The majority Sinhalese got independence, but now the Tamils want independence. Then in India, you've got different ethnic groups that want independence from India. One of the terrorist wars, which is getting bigger by the week, is one in the northeast of India, where a group wants independence from the rest of India. In Burma, you've got, which used to be British as well, you have the Karens that want independence from the central government of Burma. In Pakistan, you've got different groups that will not be supportive of the central government of Pakistan. And this is one reason why, you know, we have problems finding Osama bin Laden and dealing with Islamic fundamentalism in that part of the world. You know, wherever you look, you see these different ethnic groups wanting independence from their national government. You just see constant chaos and disorder, exactly as James Truslow Adams predicted. Deuteronomy chapter 28 is another important chapter when it comes to Bible prophecy. It is often called the blessings and cursings chapter, Deuteronomy chapter 28. This is where God warns Israel of the consequences of breaking his law. But he also promises Israel blessings for keeping his laws. And again, remember, the sons of Joseph had Israel's name named on them. So, you know, this chapter is very applicable to us in the United States today. And really, again, it helps us to understand where we are in terms of Bible prophecy. Deuteronomy chapter 28. Let's just read the first few verses and then selected verses. It shall come to pass, if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments, which I command you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you, because you obey the voice of the Lord your God. Blessed shall you be in the city, blessed shall you be in the country, blessed shall be the fruit of your body, the produce of your ground and the increase of your herds, the increase of your cattle and the offspring of your flocks. Blessed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Blessed shall you be when you come in and blessed shall you be when you go out. The Lord will cause your enemies who rise against you to be defeated before your face. They shall come out against you one way and flee before you seven ways. You know, during the time of Britain and America's rise to preeminence, to ascendancy, there was an enthusiasm amongst the people for the word of God. Now, not all the people, by any means. The people still broke God's laws. But society was generally oriented towards the Bible as the word of God. If you want a good book on this, you can read Wide as the Waters by Benson Bobrick, who's an American historian. He wrote the book in the year 2000, and he brings out how important the King James translation of the Bible was to the English-speaking people who went out and settled all these different countries around the world. And they took their Bible with them wherever they went. And the laws were based upon the laws in the Bible according to their understanding. You know, they didn't have a complete understanding, but according to their understanding. There was a zeal for the word of God. And that went on, really, right up until about 1900. And it was only after World War II that our legislatures, both here in the United States and in the other English-speaking countries, progressively started reversing all of those laws and making legal all those things that were not legal before. And so our societies have been turned upside down in the last 40 years or so. And the consequences, of course, have been very negative in so many respects. But again, let's just read verse 10 here, the promise of blessings for obedience. Then all peoples of the earth shall see that you are called by the name of the Lord, and they shall be afraid of you. Then, you know, verse 15, it shall come to pass if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments and his statutes, which I command you today, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. Cursed shall you be in the city, cursed shall you be in the country, cursed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl, cursed shall be the fruit of your body and the produce of your land, and so on. These curses would come as a result of turning away from God. You know, it's interesting just to look at demographic trends in the light of this particular passage here in Deuteronomy 28. During Victorian times, the descendants of Joseph had big families, and those big families went out and they spread around different parts of the world. Of course, the United States was settled, if you like, all the way over to the Pacific, and the various British countries were settled and developed as well as people spread around the world. And of course, the reverse is the case today. Most people have very small families, and I was struck by something that I read last week. I think it was in the New Republic magazine. It was an article about Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the leader of Iran. And you know, the Iranians are developing their own nuclear weapons, and as we've heard already today, they should have those within a few years' time. But one thing that really stood out is Ahmadinejad and those who follow him believe that they, and not just the Iranians, but all the Islamic countries, are what's known as sunrise powers. In other words, they are rising to prominence. The United States and Britain are sunset powers. You know, we're disappearing over the horizon. And one factor is simple demographics. There are, get this, four times as many young Islamic males in the world as there are young males in the Western countries. Four times as many. And in less than 20 years, it will be twice that. So there will be eight times as many. So again, they are sunrise powers. They believe, this is part of their strategy, they believe if they have nuclear weapons, that removes the nuclear option from the West. We cannot use nuclear weapons against them because they would use them against us. Then because we cannot use nuclear weapons, then they've got the people to just wear us down, basically, is what this article was saying. We could be worn down by continual conflict that goes on for decades, and Islam will triumph. In fact, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, if I can digress for a moment here, is what's known as a 12er. He and his followers believe that the 12th Imam of Shia Islam is going to return as a Messiah-like figure, the Mahdi. And they believe this is going to happen within a few years. The 12th Imam disappeared in 864 or 74 AD. So, you know, 1100 or more years ago. And he was only 5 years old when he disappeared. But he was a direct descendant of Muhammad. And they believe that he is coming back on a white horse, by the way. Ties in a little bit with Revelation 6 here. And, you know, what is prophesied there about false religion. They believe he's coming back. And they are divided because some of them believe that when he returns, the whole world will have to become Muslim. But some of them, including Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, believe that they've got to make everybody in the world a Muslim before he will return. And they believe their responsibility is to stir up trouble, which will lead to a clash between Islam and the West. And they believe they will win because there's more of them than of us. Very simple logic there, but that basically sums up an article. I saved you a couple of hours reading it. Go down to verse 25 here. Here again is the curse for disobedience in verse 25. The Lord will cause you to be defeated before your enemies. You shall go out one way against them and flee seven ways before them. And you shall become troublesome to all the kingdoms of the earth. You know, nobody will want to support you. In fact, you know, really they are trying to isolate the U.S., Britain, Israel, Australia from the rest. That's really what they keep on trying to do. And, you know, more and more countries kind of pull their troops out of this conflict because they don't want to be associated with us and suffer the consequences for that. Verse 43, the alien who is among you shall rise higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower. You know, he shall lend to you, and you shall not lend to him. He shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. You know, again, a prophecy. We've heard about illegal immigration and the things that are happening. Again, all these things tie together. Now, this whole passage applies to modern Israel, the descendants of ancient Israel, not just the Jews, but including the children of Joseph, who are, in the main, the Israelites. So many of the prophecies that you read in the scriptures relating to Israel apply to the United States and Britain, and they can also apply to the Jews because the Jews are one of the tribes of Israel. But Judah is often mentioned separately, simply because the nation of Judah was separate from the ten tribe nation of Israel for a period of time, or for a few hundred years, actually, before they went into captivity, respectively. Look at another passage of Scripture that shows that tribal affiliation is still a factor even at the time of Christ's second coming. In Revelation chapter 7, we read a description of the sealing of the 144,000. And this is immediately prior to Christ's second coming. And it shows again significance when it comes to tribal identity, beginning in verse 4. And I heard the number of those who were sealed. 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel were sealed. Of the tribe of Judah, 12,000 were sealed. Of the tribe of Reuben, of the tribe of Gad. We'll have to be quick here, so it's 12,000 of each. Of the tribe of Asher, of Naphtali, of Manasseh. Of the tribe of Simeon, of Levi, of Issachar, of Zebulun, of Joseph, of Benjamin. 12,000 from each of these tribes. So again, it emphasizes the importance of tribalism at the time of the end. Notice, by the way, Joseph and Manasseh are listed separately. Well, if Manasseh is separate, then Joseph here is a description of Ephraim. Dan is left out. We don't have time to speculate as to why that might be, but it's just interesting as an aside here that Dan is left out there and Joseph and Manasseh are listed separately. Well, today we've concentrated on a small number of the tribes mentioned in Bible prophecy, notably Joseph's two sons, Judah, the Jews, and Ishmael, the Arabs, who are all major players on the world scene today. Some of these others, like Asher and Gad and Naphtali, are not major players world affairs at this present time. But we see in the Bible there are many other tribes also mentioned. The purpose of this presentation was to help us realize that tribal identity, ethnos, is still important today. Understanding where we came from and who we are will help us understand our place in Bible prophecy. I said at the beginning that June the 28th, 1914, has been described as the end of order, the end of a world that had gone on for hundreds of years. And every conflict in the world today owes its origins to the assassination of the Austrian Archduke Franz Ferdinand. Even our conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan, you can trace them back directly to that event in 1914. Every single war. They all underscore the importance of tribes in biblical prophecy, especially during the last 90 years, as ethnicity has been an increasingly important factor in global conflicts.